Hello, Chicago.
Hello, Mr. President. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, a Wednesday edition. Thanks very much to Kim Gordon. We've got a lot going on. Fred Savage will be making an appearance. That's not true. We're going to talk to Terry Savage coming up a little bit. Frank Sennett is the name that I was struggling with for some unknown reason. He writes for Crane Chicago Business, an editor there. And they've out with their new top 25 Chicago athletes when it comes to salary. So we'll kick that around. It's interesting. I think there are 10 of the 25 are on for the first time this year, and 10 of last year's were on for the first time. So a lot of up-and-comers. We're going to start with Terry Savage. Terry, I'm glad you're here because I'm struggling a little bit already.
No, you're not struggling. I loved your description of the Dow as the EKG watching it move up and down as president-elect.
Right? The Dow, the story early was that it was flirting with 20,000 again, and then I looked, it was down 90 points from its high, and it's recovered a little bit now. It's up for the day, but it's been all over the place.
Yeah, any bets on whether we will hit Dow 20,000 at all in the next couple of months? What do you think?
I'm going to say no. I mean, I thought it was going to happen before Christmas, and then now I don't think we are.
Exactly. There's a lot of uncertainty. It's just actually the most fascinating time I've seen to watch the market. The comments that the president-elect made, let me leave aside all other issues, social media issues, and so forth. Just stick with the business issues.
Right.
Fascinating things. First of all, I didn't really know this until recently. Medicare does not get competitive bids for drugs. They just say, okay, that's what your heart meds cost. That's what your blood pressure stuff costs. Okay. And that's, even though individuals... Yeah. Go through Medicare Part D. The government, when it bids, when it gets drugs, it doesn't bid competitively. So you can, you know, there's a great argument for the pharmaceutical industry. They need a lot of money to invest to discover these drugs. That's a standard argument. But both the pharmaceutical industry and, in fact, the aircraft industry, Boeing and so forth, the costs that go into the things they sell the government, Mr. Deal, man, is going to lean on them. Now, that's not great for the stock market. It's not great for profits for those industries.
Well, okay, but
that's why you have the market.
But maybe it's not so bad if you're on a fixed income trying to afford your medicine every month.
Exactly. Now, there are two other things that were financial that were really important today. Leaving aside the wall from Mexico, we talked about a border tax on imports. So if a company goes to make cars or air conditioners or whatever else it is overseas in Mexico or anywhere else, there will be an import duty, a border tax, he calls it, to bring them back. Now, that sounds really great and punitive. We're going to keep these jobs here in America, forgetting that a very significant portion of the jobs lost in the last two decades have been lost to technology.
I think it's like, I'm going to say, I'm going to use the number 83%. I've seen that somewhere. Does that sound fair to you?
I saw it over 60%.
Okay.
So, I mean, a big, big portion of what's happening is we don't need people to do the things that machines can do. But let's just say that with the Republican-dominated Congress, gets to impose import duties. And that seems like it's going to keep jobs here. But on the other hand, it's going to raise the prices for everything we buy that's imported. And that definition of increasing prices is inflation. So you will get inflation. Now, gold is usually the first signal of inflation. It's not doing much right now. But the fact is that if you raise prices for people, are they better off? Well, if they have jobs, they're better off because they can buy stuff, but they're going to buy stuff at higher prices. So there's no easy solution to our issues.
Well, I'll give you my answer, and it'll be unpopular, but if we do that protectionism, everybody is going to pay more for their goods. So everyone, that will be a negative for everyone. If we don't, and we protect those jobs, that will be a positive for a very small minority of us. So it seems like we choose all of us, or we find another way to help a minority of us who has been displaced by automation and exports.
Well, you know, the most fascinating thing about economics is, you know, we've had this national movement. And again, this is not casting judgment on it. It's understanding that when you take action in one place, you may get a reaction in a different place. So Walmart today announced, and of course a number of retailers have announced they're closing stores. Sears is a lost cause, of course, but the Limited closing its stores and so forth. But Walmart announcing that it is cutting jobs. Why? Because of higher minimum wages, dinging profits. So, you know, it's easy to give away other people's money, as has long been said, and socialism works until you run out of other people's money. And I'm not even talking about the extremes. I'm saying that if you do something like put a border tax on, you have consequences in terms of higher prices that everyone pays. If you do something like demanding a higher minimum wage, you could negatively impact jobs. And that's what we're seeing now.
And that's
your money and you take your choices.
Right. And so that's another scale. So do you help the people on the lower end at the expense of some people on the higher end? That's just a different... That's the same question I posed, but in a different arena, I guess. And
well, I'll tell you, whenever we get down to this debate, I think back to what President Kennedy said. And by the when he cut taxes, he was the largest tax cutter, more than Ronald Reagan of the 20th century. And it was Kennedy who said, paradoxically, the way to increase tax revenues is to cut tax rates. And he also said, a rising tide raises all ships. So it's a big political debate in this country now, and it's a big economic debate. But the interesting thing about Donald Trump is he's appealing to people that to give them answers without explaining or seeming to recognize that these actions will have consequences. So yes, let's keep jobs here. We'll protect our jobs. We won't build cars in Mexico, and if they do, everybody will pay a tax. That's so appealing, but my point is, every time you get an appealing gift from the government, you ought to look at the true cost of it. That's all I'm saying.
The point is, a lot of people who think it's a great idea are going to end up, it's going to cost them. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
Terry Savage, we're going to take a break. We're talking about saving for long term and end of an era for Alcoa, too. The earnings season starts up later this week. We'll talk to Terry, continue our conversation. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for listening. I appreciate that. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand. Also, I finally got around to setting up a public page on Facebook. So there's a Steve Bertrand page. Check that out and follow it and make it better, will you? Terry Savage is on a phone line. We're talking a little bit about the Trump news conference. And I want to talk about, investing and saving for our own 401k. This is kind of the time of year people look at it. But just a quick note, you know, we always mark the beginning of earnings season with Alcoa. And that ends now, I guess, because Alcoa split. We're going to hear from the banks first on Friday.
And that'll be interesting because the bank stocks have had quite a pop on the idea that we'll have economic growth and interest rates will go up and they'll have more chance to make money. So, yeah, we'll change the tradition up a little bit. You know, this is the time of the year we started the show with, do you think we'll see 20,000? That's a so totally useless piece of information for your personal finances. It's fun to talk about. Good radio.
Right.
And next week is the annual economic forecast luncheon that I do every year for over 35 years for the Executives Club. I just moderate. I got smart and stopped forecasting many years ago, but Diane Swank and Dr. Bob Frelick and Michael Gregory of BMO, it's sold out, 1,600 people. I will report back next Wednesday on what was said. But everybody's forecasting now at the beginning of the year. What will growth be? What will interest rates be? What will happen to the dollar in the stock market? And it encouraged me to write a column that I just posted at terrysavage.com. With some perspective on that, because it really doesn't matter whether the Dow is 19,892 or 20,112. That's really an infinitesimal percentage. It's not what's important. What's important is what's happening to your investments and your retirement plan.
And if I can, by the same token, you know, I talked about the EKG stock market today, up and down within a period of 90 minutes. For most of us, almost all of us, we're investing for the long term, and that really is irrelevant.
Absolutely, and that's the most important thing. The first thing is, however, when people start making these forecasts, is to consider your own time horizon. So if you are a trader, you're sitting there, and there's still people, they're not on the trading floor anymore, but there are lots of people sitting at home, they're probably not listening to us at noon, but they are watching the markets closely and in and out all day long and doing all kinds of sophisticated trades. So every little thing that President-elect said means something.
Right.
But if your time horizon is, hey, I want to retire in 35 years, what happens today and whether it makes it to 20,000 today is far less significant than the fact that you are continuing to invest in a diversified way. On the other hand, if you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to retire in 3 years, hey, maybe you kind of want to worry a little bit about where the market's going.
So you write in your column, you write in this column at terrysavage.com that over a 20-year period, the S&P has never lost, right? If you invest in the S&P...
Yeah, with dividends reinvested, even adjusted for inflation. That's Ibbotson's Morningstar market historian.
So when do you...
in a 20-year period.
If you're retired or getting ready to retire, you're going to probably live for another 20 years or so. Do you keep it in the S&P or when do you pull it back?
No, but you have a small... Okay, so that gets us to the next challenge. If you're in your 30s and you've got 35 more years, so you're even going to think about retiring, then for sure you want to keep the vast majority of your investments in the market because you keep putting that $300 a month in. If the market goes down, boy, you'll buy twice as much stock if the market crashes. So you keep doing it. But if you're closer to retirement, you have to think about the big word asset allocation. Where am I going to put my money because I don't want it all to be at risk because pretty soon I'm not putting any more money in. That becomes a challenge because the alternatives are not easy ones. Don't anyone out there think that bonds are the safe alternative to stocks.
I go right to bonds.
They're not.
Right to bonds.
Yeah, no. Because when interest rates go up, bond prices fall. Even on the best AAA rated government bonds, corporate bonds, municipal bonds, when interest rates go up, bond prices fall. And if you had to sell in order to pay some bills or in order to take your minimum required distributions, you could be selling at a loss in bonds, just as you could with stocks. And now we know that interest rates look like they're going up. The Fed says they're going up. The president-elect is proposing some plans that could lead to inflation, which would lead to higher rates. So you don't want exposure to bonds as an alternative to stocks.
One thing you want to keep about,
dangerous.
One of the things you write about, which I really like, is that don't think that you can only be saving for your retirement in your retirement fund, right? Set stuff aside elsewhere as well.
Exactly. People, we've had such a focus on your IRA or your 401k, but it's a really good thing to save some money outside of your retirement because, number one, that lets you sleep well at night with the money you have invested in the market inside. It gives you immediate liquidity to have stuff, money in the bank, my chicken money concept. But there are other things that you might want to do outside. You can buy real estate and gold coins done through trust companies inside an IRA. But you might want to buy some of those alternatives, real estate, for example, meant for your retirement, but outside your IRA. You get some benefits in terms of tax breaks on carrying costs. So it's not just your retirement plan. Now, I realize that there's a good percentage of our listeners who are saying, wait a minute, it's hard enough for me to put money into my 401k.
Right.
I don't have excess money outside. Yeah, that's a tough way to think. You really need to build some money outside of your retirement plan,
there's
your savings,
some
even
great,
if it's just money in the bank.
Some great advice at terrysavage.com today. Terry, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Steve.
Look forward to hearing about the outing next week. That's Terry Savage. We'll talk to Frank Sennett on the other side of the headlines. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 12:38 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Coming up a little bit later in this half hour, we'll talk to Maria LaMagna from MarketWatch. She has a story about, I think it's like 500%, the increase in senior citizens who are having trouble paying their student loans. I made that number up a little bit, but the fact is that more and more seniors are losing their Social Security checks because they're being taken by the government because they owe so much money on student loans. Seems upside down, a little backwards, but it's a growing problem in the country, and Maria and I will start fixing it coming up in about 15 minutes. Before that, Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business is on a phone line. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
You're fake news, Steve.
I'm not going to answer your question. You're fake. Well, let's start with that, because that's not really in our purview here of this segment. But, you know, Donald Trump had a news conference earlier today. He was angry with CNN. Correct me if I'm mistaken, because I got kind of busy. But with CNN for their reporting of this story about the two-page sort of addendum to the securities report. And so Jim Acosta, right? It was Acosta today.
Yeah.
So Jim Acosta from CNN is trying to ask a question of the president-elect and the president won't call on him, and he keeps yelling at it, and he keeps trying, and so he wouldn't do it. Oh,
no,
actually,
he said CNN is fake news.
Michael Heidemann, the great producer, actually has some audio of that.
You're attacking us. Can you give us a question? Mr. President-elect. Since you are attacking our news organization, can you give us a chance?
You are attacking
our news organization. Can you give us a chance to ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir, can you state, Mr. President-elect, can you state categorically, Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question? You're attacking.
So there you go. A little flavor of that. You're a man about town when it comes to journalism. What do you make of that?
Kind of an electric moment. Well, it was like a movie, you know. It's like something you see on screen that doesn't really happen in real life, especially at the presidential level with reporters shouting, et cetera. I mean, you had old Sam shouting at Reagan when he got off the plane back in the day, Donaldson. But other than that, it's been a while, and it just looks like he's going to stonewall anybody he doesn't want to talk with.
Well, he's succeeding. CNN had a story last week about an undersecretary at the Pentagon or something, national security, the woman who you'd see on Fox from time to time. And she wrote a memoir, and CNN had the story about how she lifted so much of it. I mean, there was plagiarism. You know the story I'm talking about.
They pulled the book, too. Yeah.
Oh, they did. I didn't know. So I posted it on my Facebook page, and one of the first responses was, come on, Steve, it was reported by CNN. It must not be true. So, Trump has succeeded. I mean, CNN has succeeded in some ways in discrediting itself, but Trump certainly has. And that was a pretty remarkable moment at the news conference today.
It was, and it seems, from the journalistic perspective, the appropriate thing to do would be for other reporters in the room either to refuse to ask any questions until CNN was recognized or to get the question from Jim Acosta and ask it. That seems to be the appropriate response, but it was a free-for-all.
Yeah, I was anchoring the news conference here on WGN, and the audio was such that you couldn't hear well. I just assumed, I didn't know who it was, but at the time I didn't think it was CNN. It's one thing to not take a question from BuzzFeed. It's another to ignore CNN like that. And we haven't even started.
That's right. Well, buckle in, everybody.
Yeah. Danny Ecker's on the show from time to time, writes about sports and business for Cranes. And they're out with you guys are out with the top 25 sports figures, highest paid in Chicago. Always fascinating to look at. Interesting to me that the first Bear is number 6, Jay Cutler. But let's start at number 1. Of course, the best athlete in the city of Chicago, and therefore the highest paid, would be Chris Bryant.
You'd think so. But this poor guy is not even in the top 25. The MVP of the National League is not in the top 25, even though 7 Cubs are in the top 25. Number 1 is Dwayne Wade, who's cashing in with a huge contract with the Bulls. He is number 1, and Chris Bryant is still on that rookie contract, and until he gets free agency, he's not going to be anywhere near it. You needed to make $7.2 million even to get to the 25th spot this year. He's nowhere close.
And that goes back to when the whole sort of argument or debate about when the Cubs are going to bring Bryant up, right, for his rookie season.
Yeah.
They kept him down on the farm for longer than a lot of people liked, but it had to do with when he would be eligible for the big contract.
Exactly. They kept him for another year as a result of that, and fans are going to be really happy. He earned only $652,000 salary last season. Other people that are on there are no women on the list either, including Elena Delladonna, the star of the WNBA. She just made $60,000 this past season. So,
is that right? $60,000 to play professional basketball and to be one of the elite players.
Exactly.
So what struck me about this is the sort of short tenure of the people on the list. 14 of the 26, there was a tie for 25. So 14 of the 26 are on the list for the first time this year, and 10 made it on the list for the first time last year. So you've got 24 of the 26 who have been on for less than 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got a little bit of a musical chairs situation. We had a fairly high-profile trade from the Bulls, making some headlines over in New York today. Derrick Rose no longer on the list as a result of that. Chris Sale with the White Sox was traded toward the end of the season, so he didn't make the list. So a lot of these are folks that are moving on to other cities, other teams, still making a lot of money, just not in Chicago.
Yeah, and Derrick Rose is on a list this week, but it's a different list.
Yeah, he's
he's on the find list for the Knicks.
So Dwayne Wade number one, James Shields for the Sox two, then John Lester for the Cubs, Jimmy Butler, John Lackey, who's the old man, right, at 38.
Yeah, and again, in baseball, you start to get that last big contract. You know, he'd won World Series games. They brought him in for the experience. So, you know, Chris Bryant will get there one day, but right now Lackey's cashing in.
You know, and I don't want to say the Blackhawks are the most successful team in Chicago since the Cubs just won the World Series, but over a period of the past few years, the Blackhawks certainly are, and yet they don't come in until number eight with Jonathan Toews, then nine, Patrick Kane. That has to do more with the rules of the NHL, right, than the paychecks.
Yeah, the salary structure in the NHL is much lower than it is in these other major sports.
It's like journalism. You'd be on this list too if the salary cap in journalism wasn't what it is.
We'd both be like two and three at the very least.
Oh no, you'd be two.
Rick Kogan would maybe beat us out.
Kogan would be two, you'd be three, and I'd be number 47, right where I belong. That is Frank Senna. Frank, thanks for joining us today. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks, Steve. And you are always real news.
I am always real news-ish. Always put an ish on the end of it. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, we all know about student loans and the problem with loans with young adults coming out of college, but what about senior citizens? That's right, senior citizens are a growing number of people who are having trouble paying off their college loans. Sounds odd to me. Maria LaMagna from MarketWatch is on a phone line to explain it all. Maria, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so I should say welcome back to the Business Lunch. It's always nice to talk to you.
You too.
Tell me about what, put some meat on these bones. What's this about?
Right. So recently the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau released a review of complaints from older student loan borrowers. These complaints happened between 2012 and 2016. And what it showed was that the number of borrowers over the age of 60 with student debt grew from 700,000 in 2005 to 2.8 million in 2015. So obviously that's a huge spike.
And another number, the nearly 40% of student loan borrowers over 65 are in default. So not only do they owe, they're having a hard time paying. So tell me about these people. Are these people paying loans that they took for their own education, or are they paying off loans that they took for their children?
Right. I think it's a combination. You know, a lot of parents and even sometimes grandparents are asked to co-sign on loans, which they then become responsible for. And so, you know, in the past, it wasn't, college costs were much lower and it wasn't as common to take on loans as it is much more recently. So I do think a lot of this burden is being borne by people who are taking on that debt for people that they're responsible for and not necessarily their own education.
Well, I've got two kids in college and I hope to God I'm done paying off their loans by the time I'm in my senior citizen years. But it is something, I guess, that older parents, or maybe not such older parents, should be aware of.
Right, definitely. And as a source pointed out for this story, in when you are over 60, it's less likely that your income is going to be increasing in the future. And, you know, as you're saying, retirement might be around the corner, or you may want retirement to be around the corner. And so it does become a huge problem when there's this huge added expense at a time when you're not really equipped to handle it.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Because when kids come out of college, the idea is that, you know, their earning years, their peak earning years are well ahead of them, and presumably they'll be able to make the money to pay it off. And now we're talking about seniors facing student loan debt and actually seeing their Social Security benefits taken from them, garnished from them because of their debt.
Right. And so typical advice, personal finance advice from advisors tends to be that if you have a choice between saving for retirement or saving for college, it actually makes more sense to save for retirement because it is possible to get student loans, but it isn't possible to get a loan to fund your retirement. But this kind of complicates that question because it's, you know, it's taking on debt for college at the expense of saving for your own retirement, which may just be something that families have to work out among themselves, but it's a very complicated question.
You know, that's a great point. So in a way, that advice is backwards for these people because they saved for the retirement, they took out loan for their education, and now they owe those loans, and that's weakening their retirement situation.
Right, exactly. And that's obviously a dangerous situation to be in. And so it's a huge problem, and I think it's kind of coming to a head right now at a time when, you know, the age of students who took on a lot of debt is getting, you know, they're getting a little bit older, their parents are getting older, and this is just kind of the moment when it's becoming a big problem.
One more number from the story at MarketWatch.com. The number of borrowers over age 65 losing out a portion of their Social Security check to pay off their student loan grew 540% between the years 2002 and 2015. This is a real problem that's not getting a lot of attention.
It is, yeah. I think people think of the student right out of college being, you know, just having this huge debt burden. But, yeah, we haven't really heard the stories of people who are older and facing the same issue.
And one of the things that the article talks about are these Parent PLUS loans. And I've got that in my house. And that's the sort of thing that if I don't pay it off and let it hang around, it could end up costing me some of my Social Security benefits.
Exactly. And that's obviously a huge problem, and you know, hopefully one that can be avoided by trying not to take on debt for kids, which is a huge temptation. And you know, yeah. I can't say I wouldn't do the same thing.
You
but,
give it a try, Maria.
Right? No, I know exactly. Well, I'm on the receiving end of that of that bargain myself at this point. But you know, I think it is something that people have to think about. Even though in the short term, choosing a pricey college might seem really desirable, you know, the effect of that reverberates over literally an entire lifetime, which is not something to take lightly.
And one other thing then, so when you're a student and you're coming out, there's assistance. There are programs to help you pay those loans. Presumably they are if you're a senior as well, but a lot of seniors complain that the loan facilitators aren't sharing that information or they're not getting the help they should?
Exactly. There have been a lot of complaints with the CFPB about just communication issues and people not knowing exactly where to turn to take their questions. And so, you know, I think that's maybe a place where if a younger person does have parents with loans, perhaps that's a place that they could step in and help. If there are questions, maybe they could take on some of that burden themselves, try to get the answers either online or on the phone or whatever they can do, because that's also a scary situation to feel like you don't know where to go with your questions.
Well, it's a fascinating thing because they talk about young people caring for their aged adults, and here we are, aged adults still caring for their young people and sacrificing late in life to do it. Maria LaMagna from MarketWatch.com, thank you very much for joining us. It's great to talk to you again.
You too. Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.